Chapter 12. Starting Over. Be kind to one another, tender-hearted, forgiving each other, just as God in Christ has also forgiven you. Ephesians 4:32. Our off-season wasn't all that bright or positive. When we got back to campus in January after the national championship, the team took a few days off. But soon enough, both classes and training for spring practice began. Right away, it seemed like a lot of guys were taking things a little bit for granted, like some were being a bit lazy when it came to getting back to business and defending our national championship. We had just come off a year where we had all worked so hard during that 2006 season, been recognized nationally for our efforts, and, more important, earned an incredible platform from which to influence kids and others for good. It was something that I believed we should take seriously and build upon. A lot of my teammates agreed and came ready to go, but too many others seemed to have a different attitude. What some of us saw in them seemed worse than being lazy or being too casual. It seemed more like there was an entitlement atmosphere. An expectation that things and positions should just be theirs because of the previous year, an attitude that led to a lack of commitment. Too many seemed to have an attitude of, I earned my role last year and am entitled to it and intend to claim it and enjoy it. We did not appear to have the sense of commitment that helped us win the national championship. To me, though, it wasn't about the SEC championship or another national championship in 2007. It wasn't about what we would or would not accomplish. It was about coming together and committing ourselves to one another to be the best we could be. It was about building relationships around sacrifice for the team, wanting the best for the other guy, and not caring who got the credit for our mutual success. Instead, some of the guys weren't going to class or working out individually as hard or purposefully as they should have. Other guys who knew better, simply enabled that kind of behavior and allowed it to continue. When a well-placed word, example, or influence from them might have changed the effort for the better. And some of the new faces on the team liked that they were coming into the Gators' history, but what they didn't all realize was that this history was earned off the sweat and sacrifice of others, not by them. I may have been particularly sensitive to what I perceived as a drop-off in intensity and commitment that spring because I was entering the year as the starting quarterback. We weren't nearly as talented in 2007, especially on defense, and needed to work really hard. We simply didn't have enough guys who were workers, committed to the sacrifice it would take. We knew we were going to have some talent returning and new guys coming in as new members of the team, but there were definitely some things missing in the offseason. And along the way, there were additional struggles with the guys who were getting into trouble for a number of different things. We needed to get to a better place as we began the 2007 season. There were many times we were able to do well, and there were enough of those moments which allowed us to achieve what we achieved. But for what purpose? A trophy? A ring? I don't believe so. That's a temporary reward. It won't satisfy. It won't fulfill us for the long haul. Complicating matters for me was the fact that I had injured my shoulder during the 2006 season. So during the winter workouts, freshman Cam Newton and our other quarterback, Brian Wagner, worked out with our receivers, easing the load on my shoulder as it healed. I headed out with them each day as they threw to our wide receivers, contributing and helping by teaching them the offense and the various routes that we ran. Cam was naturally gifted, strong, and athletic. He was similar to me before I got serious with weights in that he is what I've referred to as being farmer strong, one of those people who is just naturally strong, not from the supplemental process of lifting weights. It was a pleasure to work with Cam and have some influence on his life. With Cam and Brian taking some of the load, I had a chance to heal a bit while still working hard in all other aspects during the off-season. By the time spring practice rolled around, I was feeling physically much better, and overall I had a good spring and spring game. I solidified my position as the starting quarterback heading into the summer, but I was still concerned with our level of preparation during that off-season and the impact it could have on our performance in the fall. I wanted to do everything I could, however, to make sure I was ready and in a position to be able to do my best. So Coach Mick worked with me individually a number of times. We had done this several times during my freshman spring, and we continued throughout my career. On days when we would only run or have a light workout in the morning, I would go back to him in the afternoon for more work. In the process, he'd try to see how close he could come to breaking me. Actually, for as similar as Coach Mick and I are, he probably wanted to see if he could break me. It might have only lasted for 45 minutes or an hour, but those workouts with Coach Mick were exhausting. One of the things he loved to do was have me squat with my knees at 90 degrees, my thighs parallel to the floor, and my back against the wall. He would then start to stack 45-pound plates and sandbags on my thighs and yell, "Don't you move! Hold it! Hold it! I'll tell you when we're done!" I would hold it until my body was shaking and on the verge of collapse, and he'd then, usually, release me. Other exercises, he would have me do at least 50 repetitions. For instance, he'd put me on the leg or bench press station, and then he'd pick a weight slightly lower than my max, the maximum weight that I could lift. I'd lift it as many times as I could, often 7, based on his starting weight. Once my arms or legs were shaking and I couldn't raise the bar again, he'd take the weight from me and put it back on the rack. Then he'd pick a weight that was slightly less, and I'd pick up with the exercise where I left off. 8, 9, and so on. Once I failed at that weight, he'd take it from me and lower the weight, and we'd pick up again, continuing that process of changing and lowering weights until we reached 50 repetitions. Then he'd take me to the next exercise for 50 repetitions of that. In a similar fashion of lowering the weights when I reached exhaustion on each one. By the time we'd finished the seated bench press, for instance, I wouldn't be able to feel my arms or hands. I know what you have to be thinking about Coach Mick, about me. We'd often do several exercises, such as seated rows, pull-ups with weight around my waist, abdominal exercises that we took straight from some of those done by Sylvester Stallone in Rocky IV, and a seated bench press to work my shoulders. And he always loved to finish with the leg press. He saved the hardest for last. The whole routine was as much for improving my mental strength as it was for increasing my physical strength. It built up a lot of confidence in me, but Coach Mick didn't do it with many guys because some guys would end up quitting in the process, and he knew that wouldn't help their confidence at all. Actually, he was afraid that it might dampen it. The Pouncies, Marquise and Mike, were both good at those workouts as well. Not many others did them. Coach Mick's workouts were based on triggering the sympathetic nervous system. I can vouch for that. There was always a definite moment of fight or flight when working out with Coach Mick. After a Friday workout like that, I wouldn't be able to walk without a limp until at least Sunday. That's why we couldn't do those kinds of workouts during the season. There was never enough recovery time available before we had to be back on the practice field or in a game. Still, it wasn't all work. During that off-season, I was working on statistics homework in the academic center when a car pulled up right as I was leaving the building. Phil Troutwine was driving, and Butchie Rowley, David Nelson, and another friend were all there. They told me to jump in because they were headed to a little place in Gainesville to see Kenny Chesney. I didn't understand why they were coming by to grab me when they explained that the place only seated about 200 people. It was a private concert. And since they didn't have tickets, they figured having a quarterback with them was their best chance to get in. I grew up a pretty big country music fan, especially in high school. I just really liked it because the lyrics tell stories, and I felt it was a lot more real than some other types of music. Obviously, it's got its stereotypes about dogs, trucks, beer, and kissing your cousin, but I like the way it sounds. I actually got my dad into it. I put a bunch of songs on my dad's iPod, and he listened to them on the way to the Philippines. When he returned, he said his favorites were George Strait, Brad Paisley, and Kenny Chesney. Not a bad trio. I thought the effort was futile. I didn't think there was a chance we'd get in. Sure enough, we were outside, milling around, unable to get in. After a few moments, a security guard recognized me and said, "Go Gators!" And about 30 minutes later, he brought out one of Kenny Chesney's managers and the head of his security. They said Kenny would love for us to come on his bus and chat for a few minutes. The kicker? I could only pick one friend to come. Not a good scene, since they were the ones who initiated the trip. Of course, they started arguing and arguing, and we never could resolve it. Finally, we drove the head of security crazy, so he told us all to come to the bus. After chatting with Kenny for a few minutes, he's so cool that you'd never know he's a Tennessee fan. We then watched his show for about an hour off to the side before he decided that he would bring me up on stage, and Butchie followed. We ended up on stage. Kenny asked me to say a few words and then asked if we knew "She Thinks My Tractor's Sexy." I'm not a singer, so more than anything, I did the gator chomp a few times and swayed side to side. By the end, Kenny put on a UF football helmet. He caught some grief back home for that, but hey, sooner or later, we all end up as Gator fans, right? Our first game of the season was against Western Kentucky, and for that entire week, I was pumped, since it would be my first game as a starter. That moment of coming to the Swamp as the starting quarterback was something I'd look forward to all offseason, not to mention my whole life. Things went pretty well, considering. We hit some good passes, made some good runs, and played how we needed to against a team that was clearly overmatched. We didn't take them lightly, though. We competed every down and played hard. And as a result, we won my first start and the first start for a few others as well. With our offense, I ended up throwing for exactly 300 yards. When you play a team like that, you expect them to be scrappy since they may not be as athletically talented. That team, surprisingly, was one of the dirtiest teams I've faced in my career. More than a few times it seemed that they were trying to get their fingers through my face mask while we were in a pile. The only logical reason, it seemed to me, was to get to one of my eyes. Just a guess. Anyway, Coach pulled me in the fourth quarter, and Cam Newton finished the game, did a solid job, and scored our last touchdown. The game was unique for another reason. It was called because of lightning midway through the fourth quarter. Our 49-3 lead that we held at the time instantly became the final score. I know people often criticize the strength, or lack of perceived strength, of our out-of-conference schedule, but our next opponent, Troy, had a solid team. We knew we needed to start out with great intensity and try to get up on them right away by playing well and hard. With their version of the spread offense, that team can put up a lot of points on you before you know it. We started well with intensity and determination and ended up scoring every time we had the ball in the first half, building a lead of 49-7 by halftime. They were playing a soft cover two defense and letting our receivers get a clean release off the line of scrimmage without bumping them too much. So we were able to take advantage of our vertical passing attack by completing deep passes downfield, or in the football vernacular, over the top of the defense. In the second half, we came out totally unfocused, and they began to chip into our lead. The first half score, and seeing what we were able to do instead of creating a hunger for us to continue, apparently caused us to lose a bit of our intensity. After Troy quickly scored 17 unanswered points to start the half, we finally regrouped and regained our focus enough to fend them off, 59-31. That next week in practice, we definitely had a number of things we needed to improve on, especially when it came to making mid-game adjustments and learning to not just pull up in the middle of the game. This was where the lack of intensity that I'd been so worried about during spring practice was showing itself. With the Tennessee game at home looming large in front of us that week, we had to learn how to finish games and cut down on our penalties. Though I'd started for the previous 2 weeks, that did little to stop the butterflies in my stomach as we prepared to take the field against Tennessee. The swamp was going crazy. It felt like the fans didn't let up from pregame until the game was finally finished. Thank goodness. We needed every one of them. The Vols got the ball first, but our defense stopped them on 3 plays. They punted to us, and Brandon James was electrifying as he ran the punt back 83 yards for a touchdown. The whole stadium was shaking. It was a lead we would never relinquish. We raced out to a 28-13 halftime lead as I took a shot downfield and hit Coop, Riley Cooper, for a touchdown. We ended up doing a lot of different things, spreading them out and running bootlegs. We passed for a second touchdown, and I ran for one before halftime. To start the second half, we received the opening kickoff and got a great drive going. We marched the ball down the field, deep into their territory, and hoped to put the game away with a speed post down the middle of the field to Coop. Tennessee's freshman cornerback, Eric Berry, was covering Coop, and Riley was supposed to come in just underneath him. Whatever he did, Coop needed to ensure that he came in flatter than Berry, that is, closer to me and in front of Eric Berry. Riley was young and didn't run the route just right, and I was young and threw it anyway, when I should not have. Then the even younger Eric Berry came in underneath Coop and picked it. I did all I could to run him down, but I couldn't catch him. Instead, I watched his back as he put distance between us, taking it 93 yards for a touchdown to put them back into the game. I still remember the play call. Far trio left 60 Houston. Some things you just never forget. I was frustrated with the interception and frustrated that I didn't catch him, and I took pride in running well for a big guy. I didn't have the same straight-ahead speed, but I have good agility and quickness. During my time at Florida, there were very few guys I couldn't run with. Each year, somebody would challenge a new guy to race me in quickness agility drills, guys like Ahmad Black, David Nelson, and Aaron Hernandez. Aaron was so mad when we raced that year, his freshman year and my sophomore year. He was sure I couldn't beat him even once. I did. Then I beat him again. And again. We raced over and over, finally quitting with my holding a 34-2 lead in our races. Don't get me wrong, I never broke into the top group with guys like Joe Hayden, Percy Harvin, Chris Rainey, and Jeff Demps. But I could run a bit, which was part of why I was annoyed with Berry's touchdown. It was now 28-20, and they forced us to punt. In their series, their running back, Arian Foster, never got a clean handoff from Tennessee quarterback Eric Ainge, resulting in a fumble. Dustin Doe, one of our linebackers, picked it up in full stride and took it all the way back to the house. With that touchdown, we were up 15, and from that point, we proceeded to bury them. Early in the fourth quarter, I hit one of our wideouts, Lewis Murphy, on a deep pass, and we scored moments later, this time on the old familiar play, 97Q Power, our name for a quarterback run up the middle. We ended up changing that name because I'd audibled to it so often, shouting, "Power! Power!" that people finally figured out what it was. We switched it up and started calling it Mickey, as a tribute to Coach Mick, who was always so focused on developing power in us. By the end of the game, we'd gained over 500 yards of offense on our way to an unexpectedly lopsided 59-20 win. Coach Meyer was proud of us. We kept competing all game long, and guys kept stepping up to make plays when we needed them. To win my first SEC start at quarterback gave me a huge sense of place and purpose. It was a good Tennessee team that we demolished, thanks to the guys up front on the line and those guys at the receiving end of the passes. I ended up with 4 touchdowns, 2 in the air and 2 on the ground. And thanks again to our receivers' catching skills and running the ball after the catch abilities, we averaged almost 20 yards per completion. Personally, it felt really good. But what felt better was that we'd done it together. It had been a team effort, truly, and a huge win for us. I was simply relieved that we'd won such a big game and was relaxing with my family that evening when the guys on ESPN started talking about me as a Heisman candidate. Up until then, I was simply thinking about starting and winning our games. It was fun to hear, but I quickly realized that I didn't have time to focus on it. I needed to get back to focusing on preparing to start and piling up our wins. The good feelings lasted one more week, but we could feel that things weren't exactly right, not yet where they needed to be, even in a win. We beat Ole Miss on the road in my first start away from the Swamp. We knew they had a pretty good team and they were well coached, but some people still took them too lightly, to the frustration of many of us. We got a lead and played pretty well, but there was an undercurrent of things to come in that game. I ended up with some surprisingly big numbers for the game, throwing for over 250 yards and rushing 27 times for 168 yards, with 2 touchdowns passing and 2 rushing. As a result, I was named the SEC Offensive Player of the Week for the second time that year after our 30-24 win. But the biggest takeaway from that game was how very sore I was following the game. From around the 4-minute mark of time remaining in the game, I may have carried the ball every single time as we ran out the clock and kept the ball away from Ole Miss. I'm not sure why it unfolded that way in 2007 with my running as much as I did, as we had some very talented running backs, but for some reason we struggled to develop a rhythm with our running game, trying to incorporate all our backs into the game. With that win, we cut Mississippi's all-time series lead over us to 1, and with SEC scheduling, we were going to be able to tie the all-time series up with them the next season in Gainesville. To be honest, I don't think any of us thought about that at the time, but one thing is for sure, we weren't paying any attention to Auburn just 1 week away. Honestly, Auburn didn't seem like a particularly good team in 2007. They have had some great teams before and after, and Auburn and Florida have been known to play some of the most dramatic football games in SEC history. Highlights include Kerwin Bell's leading Florida to 18 fourth-quarter points to erase a 17-point deficit and beat unbeaten number 4 Auburn 18-17 in 1986. Note, every Gator fan in the Western Hemisphere claims to have been at Florida Field for that game. Just ask one. Or Steve Spurrier clinching the Heisman Trophy with a field goal to beat Auburn in 1966. And plenty of other Auburn-Florida moments as well. Auburn had started the season ranked as high as number 14, but lost 2 early games at home to Mississippi State and South Florida, and Hatton looked good in the process. However, for the second year in a row against Auburn, right off the bat, things didn't go our way. I think we all underestimated them, both coaches and players. Auburn clearly had more momentum and played with more passion as the game began. They shut us down early. We went 3 and out on our first possession. In the meantime, they were slowly and methodically moving the ball against our defense. Every time they got the ball, they were holding it for 5 to 7 minutes, chalking up first downs and maintaining possession as they ran the clock down. We weren't taking advantage of our possessions, and they were running the ball trying to shorten the game. They scored twice in the first half, and it was 14-0 at the half. We tried to rally the troops in the locker room and came back out after the half, and on the first drive, we hit a deep post down to the goal line. Down 14-0, we really needed a touchdown, but Auburn's defense and their defensive coordinator, Will Muschamp, who grew up in Gainesville, rose to the challenge. The first play was 97 power, and a linebacker came straight through and blew me up in the hole. No gain. We couldn't score on second or third down either, and had to kick a field goal. Looking back, I think the reason we lost that game was because we didn't put that ball in the end zone to score that first touchdown right after we came out in the second half. It would have been 14-7, and we'd have been right in it while laying claim to that ever-slippery momentum. Instead, we kept playing from behind. But we did keep playing. Things weren't going well with our passing game, so they started running me a lot. Counter left, counter right. We kept fighting and finally tied it with 2 touchdowns in the fourth quarter at 17-17. Our tying touchdown came on an out route that I threw to Cornelius Ingram, whom I played basketball against when I was at Jacksonville Trinity Christian Academy and he was at Hawthorne High School, in the end zone. With a couple of minutes left in the game, we got the ball in pretty good field position and then called a screen play to Percy. The screen was a good call, and Percy tried to turn a good play into a great play, as he usually can. But as he was trying to cut to the outside, a defender swiped his leg and tackled him for a 7-yard loss. We were in bad shape, because that hindered our ability to do anything on second and third down. I hit Keiston Moore on second down, then on third down and a long yardage to go, the pass was broken up and we had to punt. Auburn took the punt and marched the ball down the field and then kicked a game-ending field goal to beat us at home, 20-17. It was so frustrating because we had the ball with an opportunity to win and I couldn't get it done. Right or wrong, I put the loss squarely on my shoulders. I'd let everyone down. I felt like that T-leaguer again, wishing I had the ball in my hands one more time at the end of the game to try and make things right for us. It was a tough one to take. I was praying a lot at different times in that game, too. Obviously, my earlier point about God's not necessarily favoring a particular outcome over another would seem clear. I guess it was an answer to prayer, just not the answer I wanted. The next night, Coach Meyer and I had a long talk, mostly about handling defeat. His words were quite helpful to me. We went through and read a number of different Bible verses together, focusing on how God won't give us more than we can handle. We spoke about how God has a plan for our lives and our lives together as a team. As we talked, we both realized that we didn't feel we'd played our best. I think it was good for both of us that night to be spiritually encouraged in the process. We talked about God's having a plan for everything, even though we don't know what it is. And while we might think we have a lot on both of our plates, we each took comfort in knowing, through God's past faithfulness, that no matter what is on our plates, He will never leave us and will help us handle whatever it is. Of course, That night with Coach Meyer wasn't all theology. We also talked about the game some. In that last series, I felt like I could have helped before we got into second and third down and long yardage. The competitor in me wanted to say, "Just give me the ball all three plays and let's see what happens." Instead, we had a good talk about how we'd handled it the next time and how we'd handle this loss going forward. It was a good opportunity for me and Coach to have that bonding experience and to be able to talk about those things that mattered most as well. I felt really blessed again.